Blue-collar workers in today's America are likely to make less than their parents did, with fewer hopes of upward mobility. That's one of the conclusions of a recent in-depth study of the country's economy by Oliver Blanchard, former head of the International Monetary Fund, and Larry Summers, our former Secretary of the Treasury. The key detail is the pace of our recovery from the 2008 recession, as contributing editor Neil Milner tells us.
There are two troubling conclusions, and they would be the first to admit that they're troubling. One is that we really have not recovered from the 2007-2008 recession any better. In fact, we're recovering a little worse than we did after the Great Depression. That the projection is that by 2019, the increase in average wage would be like 1% a year. And so the recovery has been not only slow, but relatively very slow. That's just the first thing. The second thing is this paper, which is written by two very eminent economists, they certainly have ideas about what we could do. But the thrust of the paper is that we're really not very sure how to handle the next shock, the next recession. In lots of ways, we're always fighting the last war, and each recession is different. But one of the things, for example, is what do you do about interest rates? That's become a much more problematical response than it used to be. So you're faced in a situation now where not only are things not going all that well, and we've gone well past the number of years when there would be another shock, predictably, but also there is basically no consensus on how to handle the next kind of recession. And it's likely, as the Financial Times pointed out, it's going to be improv day.
We're due for the next recession, is what you're saying.
Well, statistically, we do. We usually don't go 12 years in the cycle they're talking about. We usually don't go 12 years without some kind of downturn. Now, the downturns vary, and some are more serious than others. But if you think right now that we're improving very gradually, very, very slowly, a downturn is going to – it's very easy to bring the downturn back to where we started from.
It's gotten a lot easier to predict those. I mean, it's still in the realm of economics where all predictions are like weather reports, subject to change at the last minute. But in 29, we really were taken by surprise, more so than we could be today, don't you think?
Well, I think whether we may have been taken by surprise ideologically, because what surprised people, policymakers in 1929, I think, was that the old methods didn't work.
Yeah.
You're asking a very complicated question. There certainly is better data, and we have more experience now, and economics has come a long way. And I want to say I'm not an economist, so there's a lot of kind of inside baseball stuff that I understand, but not with that kind of degree. But we do understand more. But nevertheless, things are full of surprises. The 2007-2008 one was certainly an example of one that's surprising. And there still is, of course, great differences of opinion about what the real sources of that thing were. Sometimes it differs on ideological lines, but economists still have very different opinions about that.
The rich haven't gotten any less rich since 2008.
Right? No. The top 1% continues to do well, and that has to do with a lot of things, not the least of which is the enormous advantage that wealthy people get from birth on in terms of cultural advantages. And the other is just how money is allocated in this society, where the wealth goes, where you can now make a lot of money you couldn't before. And there's nothing that's really changing that at all.
How has the bottom 10 or 20% done since 2008?
They've done badly. Yeah. The likelihood of your moving up from the lower classes, statistically lower classes, to higher up is considerably less than it used to be. And people who are very poor are not doing very well at all. Now, that's not just about the recession. They weren't doing very well at all anyway. Arguably, since the 1970s was the peak of equality, relative equality in the American economy. And since then, for all kinds of reasons, the society's become more unequal.
You could move from working class to middle class.
Well, you could, yes.
Post-war through the
70s. Post-war, yeah, you could. And it's pretty clear what the reasons were. There were a lot of good factory jobs. Mm-hmm. Factory jobs paid well. Unions were strong. There were many opportunities. And if you did go on to college, the likelihood of you getting good jobs were pretty great. The development of the Rust Belt, the change in the blue-collar work, all of these sorts of things made that less likely to happen. And certainly tax policies benefited the very, very wealthy more than anybody else.
I want to go back to that comparison that the economists made to the getting out of the Great Depression, mm-hmm. 29 and early 30s, because one of the reasons that the rise out of that Great Depression was accelerated was because of governmental policies, you know, putting the working class back to work. There isn't anything like that today.
No, there isn't anything like that today, but let's go back to the Depression. One of the things that got us out of the Depression was World War II.
Yeah, there you
because
go.
Because that really does heat up, and as Summers and Blanchard point that out, it really did heat up the economy.
Sure.
First of all, you had to produce more, and secondly, you brought other kinds of workers into the labor force. And the thrust of that stayed pretty much around until the 1970s. Right now, the ability of government policy to have effects on the joblessness rate, on underemployed blue-collar people or unemployed blue-collar people is pretty problematical. And I would argue that in the last election, the last presidential election, whatever else you say about Hillary Clinton, she was representing a party that whose sets of ideas about how to deal with this aren't very dramatically good either. I would argue that nobody, liberal or conservative, really has a good way to change this kind of formula. Certainly, Democrats would argue, and I would agree, that they're willing to do more things that would ameliorate this thing. And I think Summers and Blanchard, Summers has worked for Democrats, but they're essentially pretty nonpartisan in this writing here, would agree there are things that government can do. But this is a pretty serious and stubborn problem that involves some globalization, that involves the health now of unemployed workers and the lack of productivity. And there really isn't right now a good answer.
Most of the jobs that seem to be being created these days are for, you know, $10 an hour.
Well, it's the service sector, and the service
yeah.
sector doesn't pay well. The service sector is less likely to be unionized. There certainly are pockets where that's not true, and politicians tend to emphasize the pockets, some tech company starting something and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But if you just look around at your friends and family, especially younger ones, they're working in the service economy. The service economy pays less, and there's a chance that they have two service economy jobs to try to make up for the difference in money.
Most of the people in the, you know, what you might call an upper middle class stratum today might look back to the time 30, 40 years ago when they started in the service economy with no expectation that they were going to have to stay there.
Oh, yeah. Well,
you all did, right?
You did. You would think about maybe the, let's say, the upper middle class service economy that might include social workers and so on. Yeah, if you look at when I was a kid back around, I don't know, the Christopher Columbus's time. But the assumption is you worked in the service economy as you went to college to earn money to get through college, and mm-hmm. when you got out of college, there were other kinds of jobs that paid better. They weren't, of course, all union jobs, and they were not necessarily, you didn't even think about blue-collar jobs because you had other ways to go. That's become more complicated, but there's no question that the biggest difference in American society right now is between people who have a college degree and people who don't. And what I mean by differences is not just economic differences, but all kinds of differences in terms of the ability to educate your children, child rearing, stability of marriage, likelihood of being involved in a religious institution. There's a great cultural and economic divide that's taken place.
What can change all that? What can change these negative trends that we're seeing?
Well, I think the first thing to understand is that in this day and age, with a great deal of polarization, and if you watch how the Congress is working right now, it has to be very discouraging that there isn't even an attempt to do this right now, and they probably couldn't if they wanted to. And frankly, I don't think the tax bill is going to help very much, and it may hurt if the Republicans get what they want. I think that it's a very hard that there is no clear, definitive answer to this. I think certainly, and again, everything I say here, there's going to be some people who say it doesn't make as much difference. Granted that, I think the ability to encourage people to get at least a two-year college degree is one thing. The ability to recognize the value of immigration and how they help the economy is another thing. And I think another thing is to take a harder look at globalization, which both parties want to do, to see in who benefits and who does not benefit. All of these things can make some differences, as well as unions getting stronger in certain sectors, and this is a controversial one, having a higher minimum wage.
You know, you're familiar with the pendulum effect of history, right? Going from one extreme to the other. Maybe that'll kick in at some point.
Well, it may, but the trouble with the pendulum theory is that you never know how far the pendulum is going to swing back and forth. I subscribe, not a random theory of history, but small jumps, small things back. But I don't think, I'm not very optimistic right now about the ability to deal with these economic issues in any kind of productive way, as much because of the way our politics are working and as much because people are totally polarized about how to do this. It isn't even that I could have this conversation, and I certainly lean left of center. I could have this conversation with some Republicans and they would say, well, we can see some of it and so on. There is a very different notions out there about what people should accomplish by themselves and not. So we'll have to see. There are just some really bad signs out there. The degree of opioid addiction, for example, and how much of that is related, not all of it, but how much of it is related to unemployment. The fact that it appears as if opioid addiction is so serious that it's actually affected the productivity rates in our economy.
Neil Milner is a retired University of Hawaii professor of political science and contributor of our segment, The Long View.